on the Golf Club Network, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Welcome to August 4th. You're in the clubhouse, and boy, the Summer Olympic track and field is underway. Gabby Douglas is already on a cereal box. Missy Franklin's being heralded as the female Phelps, and Michael Phelps has his 21st Olympic medal after winning gold in the 100-meter butterfly. That's 17 gold medals in his career. Now, how is golf going to break records and wow people like this? How about simply ignoring par? So don't protect that new course too much when you build it there. Joining us in the clubhouse this morning, Adam Shupak starts off the show. Golf writer this week for the New York Times. He's at the 3M Championship, works for Golf Week magazine, and he's the author of Dean Beaman, Golf's Driving Force. But first, let's thank our sponsors for making the show possible.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Alakai Mechanical, the best minds in plumbing, air conditioning, and sheet metal. When you need a new roof, flashing, gutters, downspouts, AC ducts, or a commercial kitchen and custom stainless steel counters, it's Alakai Mechanical. Hoipu Bay Golf Course, combining the beauty of nature and the design of Robert Trent Jones Jr. Bordered by emerald green mountains, 30 acres of tropical plants, and ancient places of worship. Hoipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore gem. Also brought to you by Discount Furniture Warehouse, offering a wide range of furniture to complement your island lifestyle. 345 North Nimitz Highway, visit HawaiiDiscountFurniture.com. Discount Furniture Warehouse, where the prices are so low, it's insane. And by Star Protection, for property threat and risk assessment, protection for your home or business or special event. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California.
All right. It looks like the world's number one is in no danger of losing his spot at the top of the world golf rankings, because the world number two, Tiger Woods, is languishing somewhere in the middle of the pack. No cut. He wouldn't have made it, probably, based on the score. And his putting seems to be his nemesis this week. Once again, can't get that putter going. We're going to be talking a bit later with Bob Grober about putting, not necessarily Tiger Woods. At the 3M Championship, we have a four-way tie. Peter Sr., Gil Morgan, Steve Pate, and Chen Sun Liu. Okay, we're going to have to talk with a gentleman who's right there at the 3M, Adam Shupak. Welcome to the show.
Aloha. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you have to introduce us. We have, well, most of us who don't follow the Champions Tour that much. Chen Sun Liu. Give us a little background.
Well, he's from Taiwan. He's actually been pretty good player out here on the Champions Tour. Teamed up a couple of years ago with Andy Bean and almost won the Legends of Golf. And so he's been playing pretty well. He doesn't speak great English, so they didn't bring him into the media center, so I didn't get too much time with him yesterday. But, you know, one of the people that I did enjoy talking to yesterday was Steve Pate, who has been struggling with his putting, and happened to bump into Dave Stockton on the putting green, who's in town for the Greats of Golf Challenge this week. And he said he nearly tackled him to get a putting lesson, and Dave Stockton told him he should switch from the belly back to a regular putter, and he said he made a whole bunch of 40-footers, and he's in a share of the lead right now and see if he can keep it going.
Now, isn't that interesting? A switch from the long putter to the regular putter. Now, what's your stand on the long putter, the anchoring of the putter? Do you think it should stay or go?
I don't think it should be part of the professional golf. I think it's great for the amateurs, and so I kind of go with the bifurcation. I think it already exists, and it's time to just admit that. And that, you know, we could still. I don't think it's going to bother people if you have the pros playing with one set of equipment and regular golfers with something different. And I do think that it, you know, talking to enough players, I really think it takes the nerves out of the game. It makes it a little easier. Even Steve Pate said he was missing his security blanket on four footers. He was making a lot of four footers with the belly putter, but he felt like he wasn't making much from longer distances.
Yeah. Now, what about Tiger Woods? I mean, he can't seem to make a putt from five.
Yeah, I know. I would love to see Tiger go back to the old Scotty Cameron model that he used and had so much success with. I don't know if that's it, but You know, he had so much success, won 13 of those majors with that putter. And so, you know, he's using the Nike method now, but I would think about maybe switching back to Old Faithful there.
Yeah, I would think so, too. And I don't know why he hasn't tackled Mr. Stockton himself. I don't know why everybody doesn't tackle Dave Stockton. He seems to be the man. Speaking of the man, I was fascinated. This book that you have written, Dean Beaman, A Golf's Driving Force, is a fascinating book. It takes us back. You start off in the beginning, and I had no idea how upset Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer were with Dean Beaman's idea of marketing, merchandising, making the PGA Tour into what it's become today.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please. Just jump right in.
I was going to say, well, you know, the beginning, you know, is kind of, I tell people, if you have a cannon, you got to fire it. And that was the story I felt golfers didn't know a lot about. It really began, you know, in March of 1983 at Pro-Am Day at Bay Hill Classic, when Jack and Arnold sat down and talked about some of the things that were starting to happen at the tour. And they really felt that some of the things that you mentioned, the marketing and licensing and golf course development that the tour was starting to get involved in, was undermining players' abilities to make their own deals. And they just weren't buying into Dean's grand vision for the tour. They were really, you know, in Dean's words, looking for kind of a glorified tournament organizer who would coordinate the schedule and you know, had the rule book on his desk and maybe knew Bob Hope's unlisted number. But Dean Beaman had, you know, a vision that was very different than the way the tour had ever been run. And, you know, he thought the pie could grow bigger and that these guys would still be the top chefs. And it was quite a battle. And, you know, really almost, you know, they wanted to oust him as commissioner.
Absolutely.
And not a lot of people knew that.
Yeah, that's the part, you know, where they sat down and went, yeah, we're going to get rid of this guy. I mean, he's in our... And you got to understand, Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer were little corporations in and of themselves. They really, because of their power, their name recognition, the power of their game, they had their own deals going on. Did they really think that their pie would become that much smaller with what Dean Beaman's vision of giving a little bit more money to everybody? Did they really feel threatened?
You know, they felt that if there was a shirt being sold with the tour logo instead of the Golden Bear or Arnie's umbrella, or if they, you know, when they were trying to build golf courses, all of a sudden they were having to compete, they felt, with themselves in terms of the PGA Tour starting to build these TPC courses. And they did not like this competition that they felt that they were having. And you know, it was quite a battle, and it wasn't just the two of them. You know, signing this letter saying that the commissioner had exceeded the mandate of the position were names like Hale Irwin and Tom Kite and Raymond Floyd and Johnny Miller and really a Hall of Fame cast of characters, Tom Watson as well.
Okay, so from the way you do the book, and I really recommend this, if you want to get to know the inner workings of the tour and how it started, I didn't realize that in 1916, when the PGA of America was formed, it was in charge of amateurs and professionals alike, and the professionals, they wanted to split away from the PGA Tour of America and do their own thing, the touring professionals. Explain that.
Well, they kind of felt that the, you know, the tournaments was such a different thing than what the club pros were doing at the time, and that, you know, they could do better, they felt, on their own. The television deal was starting, the television money was starting to become big or bigger at that point. And so they just felt that they needed to have control of running their own tournaments. And so, yeah, there was a big separation in 1969. I mean, the players were really going to just go off on their own, but they're able to come to an agreement and kind of become an umbrella of the PGA of America. And you know, the first commissioner was Joe Dye, and it's not until Dean becomes commissioner in 1974 when Dean realizes that they really haven't fully broken away, and so he's able to draft a new a change to the that really gave the PGA Tour its own, you know, separate. They really finally were on their own, and it took a lot of creativity on his part to craft a deal that turned out to be, save the tour. We calculated somewhere between, you know, $500-600 million over the course of the 35 years since that deal was arranged.
We need to talk about the money. I mean, the money is huge, and the egos behind the money and the PGA Tour and the way Beamon was able to manipulate those egos. But what I thought was funny is how the amateur and the professional separation was... It really kind of climaxed with the Bob Hope and Frank Sinatra kind of putting an end to it, because didn't somebody scheduled two events, one with Bob, one with Frank, so close together that the touring pros said, hey, we can't do this schedule. That kind of broke it.
That was a big factor. And, you know, it was so tough for some of these guys. Arnold Palmer in particular, you know, his father was a PGA professional, and Deacon Palmer felt, you know, you got to support the PGA of America. He tried very hard to kind of stay neutral, and but then eventually he decided, you know, I got to go with the players, and you know, he helped, you know, he was a big player in this. So was Jack Nicklaus. Guys like Gardner Dickinson were the leaders as well, and so it all kind of comes back full circle when there's this conflict with Dean Beamon, and they're trying to oust him, that Nicklaus, his name is all over the documents that actually gave Dean Beamon permission to do these marketing deals and to do the licensing. And that was one of the reasons that he stood up in front of all the players that were gathered at a tournament in Westchester in 1983 and said, you know, I'm fully behind Dean Beamon as commissioner, and, you know, withdrew all the objections.
Well, but Nicklaus, wasn't he surprised to find out how much support he had given something that he was really against?
Yes. And the airplane trip where Jim Colbert, who kind of is the middleman, breaks this news is, you know, one of the real great themes, I think, of the book. And Jack Nicklaus does deserve a lot of credit for staying there, addressing the players and eating a little bit of crow.
Exactly. Now, okay, this is the question. How did you get permission to get in the inside and get so much of the detail?
Well, what made it really happen was the fact that Dean Beamon kept such great records. He had the documents for the tour, all their board meetings and stuff, going back to when Joe Dye took over as commissioner in 1969. So I was able to see things that really nobody ever had access to. And then I went and talked to 200, you know, or more than 200 of the former players, his lieutenants, and all these interviews, able to kind of piece things back together, how it all happened. And you know, one of the things that Dean said to me in the beginning was, go talk to everyone and anybody. You know, he knew there were going to be people that still thought he didn't do things right. I went and talked to the Solheims about the whole groove situation. And so, you know, it's not just what Dean thought. It's what a lot of people thought and remembered from these different situations over the years.
Yeah, people who didn't like Beamon and who people who respected him and may not have liked what he was doing but saw his vision. We're talking with Adam Shupak. He wrote Dean Beamon, Golf's Driving Force. You really do need to read this. It's an excellent book. We're going to take a break. Get into those egos and the money and that evergreen contract. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
In the security business, trust is earned over time. That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star Protection Agency. Your AC runs year-round in Hawaii. Whether you're in office, store, building, or shopping center, your AC on the fritz can ruin your day and stop your business. Alakai Mechanical does it all, from AC sales to maintaining your AC, so it runs better and lasts longer. Alakai world-class professionals are using only the best parts to keep you cool. Protect your investment, from window system to cooling towers across Hawaii. Call Alakai Mechanical, keeping you cool.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Hoipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Hoipu Bay.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
Welcome back. We're talking with writer, golf writer, and author, Adam Shupak. Dean Beeman Golf's Driving Force is a book you really need to get a hold of and read. It's a great read. You know, Adam, Lee Westwood reminds me the most of he's kind of like our golf equivalent, but they all have become like this. Kind of a NASCAR. You know, when you got the label here, you got on the one side of the hat, you got this one, the other side of the hat, you got this thing on the front and something in the back. And, you know, Jim Furyk's wearing, you know, what is that stuff? A 5-hour energy that's all on his cap. It's like, who would have thunk it? But apparently, Dean Beeman had this vision. He was really into merchandising the PGA Tour. Is this what he was driving for?
Well, you know, he is the guy who came up with the idea. I mean, tournaments back then were named for, you know, it went from really Dean Martin to Dean Witter during the course of his tenure. But to put a commercial name on a tournament, he said, was like trying to sell Jesus T-shirts at the foot of the Sistine Chapel. This was just, you know, you couldn't do this. And it really changed with television, because a television sponsor at the time, you know, CBS would say, you know, we're at the Charlotte Open, or, you know, they wouldn't say the name of a title sponsor. And Beeman crafted what the model that works today, where the title sponsor buys, you know, so much of the TV time, and that guarantees that the CBS or NBC, whoever's doing it, that all their expenses are going to be covered to put on. Because golf really, you know, it was the most expensive sport to broadcast. And with this new model that he was able to come up with, where the sponsor would get its name in TV, you think about all the other value in terms of it being in the newspaper. That was one thing I had never really thought of until he brought it up. You know, the 3M championship this week will get mentioned in the newspaper, whereas they, you know, probably on the front page here in Minneapolis of the sports section, 3M couldn't buy an ad in the newspaper back then, you know, on the front page of the paper. So all these little things made sponsoring a golf tournament really valuable. And so golf went from the most expensive to broadcast to the most profitable for the networks. And that maybe is one of his biggest accomplishments. I think back to when I was growing up and watching golf on TV, you'd see, you get an hour and a half on Saturday, 2 hours on Sunday. You see about, you know, six holes on the back nine, and now you got, you know, the Golf Channel exists because of this model.
Yes.
And we get to see all 18 holes of major championships, and all of this really worked because of this model that he came up that made, you know, golf no longer so dependent on a television rating, because the networks knew they were going to make money no matter what.
Yeah, the sponsor also buys the record books, because, like, here in Hawaii, we had the Mercedes-Benz, the SBS, the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. From now until the end of time, until the next sponsor buys it, it'll be the record from the Hyundai Tournament of Champions, right? It'll never go back. You won't talk about the Mercedes or Mercedes-Benz. No, that doesn't exist anymore. It's just interesting, because as soon as what is the name of the I shouldn't even say their name, Nationwide Tour,
right?
Yes, you know, no longer, do not say that word, because they don't exist. They've bought the tour in effect, for all intents and purposes. And that, I gotta just lay this out. You know, Beeman, we're talking about Dean Beeman, Golf's Driving Force, and Adam Shupak wrote this great book that you've got to pick up. merchandising of the tour didn't go over well with the golf writers, and I just, including Hall of Famer Dan Jenkins, and I love what Jenkins Beamon says. Jenkins was really tough on him. The fodder for his humor, which can be devastating, was a great line. Wait, Jenkins really didn't like it, huh?
Well, no, it's funny. They're great friends, and that's one of the things I really admire about Dean Beamon. Is, you know, he's had some of the toughest arguments and fights over deals and stuff with some of the past presidents of the PGA of America. And those are his golf buddies, or the people that he does business with after he retired. And same with Dan Jenkins. The two of them got together at Congressional last year at the U.S. Open, had a good chat. Dan Jenkins kind of thanked him in his Hall of Fame induction speech. But there are a lot of things Dan Jenkins didn't like that he did, and he definitely wrote about them. But, you know, Dan Jenkins lived in Ponte Vedra for a while, and so the two of them would see each other a bunch. And you know, Beamon, he could take it. A lot of people can't, but he was able to. He took the criticism pretty well. He didn't like it at times, but he knew he had a goal. He was a player. A lot of people forget about that. That he was a guy who won 5 times on the PGA Tour and really gave up his career at age 34 to take on, you know, the job of commissioner. He wow. wanted to win major championships. He won the U.S. Amateur twice. So he really thought he was capable of winning championships, but he felt, you know, I can probably do more for the game. I'm 34. How many majors am I going to win? He thought he could do more for the game as commissioner, and I think in the end he really did.
So 60 really is the new 40, or 40 is the new 60. So Tom Kite said last week, you know, it's when you're 34 today, we're still thinking about how many majors Tiger Woods can win, and he's 36. You know, can he really?
You know what? In that day and age, the players were pretty much getting close to retiring, and they'd go get club jobs in their 40s. There was no senior tour until Dean. That's another thing that Dean helped create. And the guys that I'm watching here pretty soon teeing off at 12:30 here at the Greats of Golf Challenge. David Graham, Chichi Rodriguez, Lee Trevino, followed by Team Army, which is Arnold Palmer, Don January, and Miller Barber. I mean, it's just this great opportunity here to see some of the greats of the game in action, maybe one last time. Some of these guys are getting up there in age. And it really reminds me of how that tour got started. Those founding fathers were just looking for a little diversion, a reason to get out of the house, to see old friends and compete again. And that's what they're here doing this week. They all had dinner last night, 14 of them, and you know, the tournament director said, I can't tell you anything you could print. It was just, these guys were going at each other for hours.
That's the part I love about the Champions Tour. You know, it's fun because they don't care anymore. They don't care about being politically correct each other. You know, they can jab at each other and jab back, and it's a great time. I had an opportunity at over at, what is it, the Wendy's? It doesn't exist anymore. Yes, but it was a lot of fun watching just in the clubhouse Gary Player and Tom Watson, and Arnold Palmer wasn't there, but Jack Nicklaus was, and the way they are sitting with their families and at the same time going to each other's table or talking across the table at each other, and you've got Tom Watson or coming over to ask Tom Watson's asking Jack Nicklaus, could you sign a couple of flags for me? You know, getting autographs from one another for friends. Let me just, on when you talk about Dean Beamon managing to stay friends with the people who he'd have these monstrous fights with, what I thought was so interesting was how he was able to manipulate the egos of the uber rich to get them, the people like the Walmarts, the RJR Tobacco, the, you know, Nabisco,
right,
to get them to put up the sponsor dollars. He used lines like, are you sure you can afford it?
he did do some clever deals. There was the time he read about in the Wall Street Journal about Nabisco, about tobacco and maybe no longer being able to sponsor sporting events, and so was able to turn that little nugget into a long-term deal that would just keep renewing, in, you know, in perpetuity, really, at that point, until the company later was sold and the new ownership bought out of the deal. But even when they got out of the deal, they got the tour wound up getting something like $20 million, and that helped fund, you know, all sorts of things, including the Hogan tour.
Yeah.
So.
How much did they, what was the buyout? It was like $24 million.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that, and that lasted forever. Fascinating book. Absolutely. It must have been wonderful writing, researching, and then taking all that and compiling it and then putting it together. You've gotten some accolades. Jay Flemma, although it's certainly too early to be picking a winner for any Sports Book of the Year awards, golf writer Adam Shupak stands a terrific chance of having to clear a space on his trophy case for some end-of-the-year hardware. His excellent new book, Dean Beeman Golf's Driving Force, is a detailed review of the monumental accomplishments of the PGA Tour commissioner who transformed the organization from an also-ran in the sports world to a powerhouse. Adam Shupak, thanks for being on the show. Great talking with you.
Enjoyed it. Thanks. Let me know. I'm happy to come on anytime.
Excellent. We'll talk again soon. Aloha. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
The Golf Club, sponsored by the Discount Furniture Warehouse, where the prices are so low, it's insane!
Now is the time to save some money.
The Discount Furniture Warehouse has mini futons, sofas, and sectionals, bedroom set, platform, bunk bed, dining room set, in stock now. 345 North Nimitz Highway.
And check out our website at HawaiiDiscountFurniture.com.
Where the prices are so low, it's insane!
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
Poo Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
Yeah, a mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
And through the world of Twitter, I have met some very interesting people. Among them, Shannon Grissom, artist, musician. She is a producer and host on television. And she also creates head covers. And Daphne's head covers carries them. She has designed four of them. Welcome to the show, Shannon Grissom.
Thank you for having me, Daniel.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. Now, you know, I didn't put it all together. I just saw the artwork that you do with the sock monkeys. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, those are the sock monkey head covers. Right. Ding, ding, ding. You know, sometimes I'm slow. But you inherited your sock monkeys from your mom?
Yeah. You know, when she passed away, there was a sock monkey and an old, you know, trunk that she had. And I just kind of stashed it away. There was this competition where I needed to paint something, and I ended up doing a tribute to her using the sock monkey. And that turned into a children's book. And then from that, I did the book unveiling at our country club and at Ridgemark. And the CEO at the time said, you know what, Tana, those would make great head covers. And I thought, you know, I'll be darned. So I went and had a prototype made. And I said, you know, I don't know the industry. My dad's a golfer. He golfs, you know, he's 78. He golfs three times a week, more if he can get it. And at that time, I hadn't golfed at all. And I didn't know anybody in the industry. He says, well, I said, well, who did he call? He gave me a couple names. He says, but, you know, I really like Daphne's the best. They're really, you know, good company. So I was really nervous, and I made this huge script and practiced, and I called her. She said, "Oh, just send me a prototype. I've already talked to Eric." So it took about a year's worth of negotiation, but now it's worldwide.
Your children's book is called Monkey Made of Sockies.
That's correct.
That's adorable. And then you went on and you created the head covers, sock monkey. So does anybody use these? I seem to have seen them on tour.
They are on tour. I've got there are at least six LPGA pros that are carrying them right now. And I would say for the original sock monkey head cover, the first one that was designed, Jennifer Rosales, I think, was the first to bring it on. And then Lita Lindley, it's also her flagship head cover for the Crater Willy, the Lita Lindley Classic. And so both the manufacturer, both Daphne's and myself, give a percentage of those head covers to help out Crater Willy, because it's Crater Willy.
That's a very unusual condition, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a genetic disorder, and that children have difficulty. They eat too much and don't know when to stop, and it also affects, you know, other areas. So that goes to help them, and we try to partner each head cover with a cause, and they're named after vintage clubs. Like Massey is the original, and Rake. Rake is the boy head cover. He goes over the large drivers, and that's a Golfsmith exclusive. And we give a percentage of the proceeds to Gabriel's Angels.
Gabriel's Angels.
Oh God, these are great therapy dogs that they go and work with children who have been at risk and really help turn them around. So it's a really cool organization.
Gabriel's Angels and Daphne's head covers, they've been together. They have a special Gabriel head cover, which, isn't it adorable?
It is. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's adorable. Daphne is amazing. She's been on the show a couple of times. Daphne Jane. So you've got this one, Rake.
Yeah.
It's a Golfsmith exclusive.
Yeah.
You can get it at Golfsmith.
Uh-huh.
Now, what's the twins?
Okay, so we had the first two, and she said, well, you know, Shannon, it's Jane at Daphne. She says, it's time for a family. And so the first two fit the drivers. And so she wanted me to design a child, and I'm a twin, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to design twins. And I sent her two or three sets of twins. I thought, worst case is she'll at least like one of them. And when she saw the design, she said, oh, they've got to have twins. So she picked both of them up, with the boy and the girl. They fit hybrids or your putter. I've got them on my hybrids. So
kind of appropriate. So two different heights, you know, two hybrids. Right? You got one and two, and yeah, you know which one's which. That's cute. Now, how do you know which one's which? That would be the problem.
It is. My dad said, you know, you ought to put numbers on them.
Yes.
That's a good idea. But I just actually, for me, I based on the number, on the lower, you know, I figure that the female's usually the smaller of the species.
Oh, wait a minute.
So that's how I figure out which club I've got it on. But the thing with me is, once I start playing, I'm really bad with my head covers. I just take them off because I don't want to put them on, take them off, you know. I leave them, they kind of ride around in the bath.
Okay, this is for all of you who think you have to put your head cover back onto your club.
I don't. Except, you know, you got to leave enough on so they don't clunk around, you know, when you're riding in the cart.
But, yeah, that's a good point.
But other than that, they don't all, I guess it depends on how particular you are about, you know, your travels with your clubs. But it drives me nuts to have to put them back on every time. So I only leave a few of them on, and the rest they.
I think a good way to notice is how many of your clubs don't have head covers. Those are the ones that you actually need. The rest can stay home. Just play with those. I mean, who needs to carry a gigantic bag of clubs that never get used anyway, right?
Yeah.
You know, those are my go-to clubs. Get a little tiny bag, and then you can walk, and there's no problem.
Yeah, I'm with you.
A So you're still looking for. I like how you hook up, you know, the head cover with a philanthropic organization. You haven't figured one for the twins? There must be something unusual about twins that would go with that.
I'm still searching for a good partner. I haven't found one yet, but I'm still looking. And they're new. They just debuted this year. So I'm looking for something that would be a good fit. I think what we're looking for in a partner is somebody that, I think the biggest restrictions that we've had or why I'm so picky about charities is if the infrastructure is so huge that I can't say anything without getting 20 different signatures before they go to their website, then it's not a good fit. So
it's also top heavy, and too many people are making money.
I'm looking for where I can do the most good and get the word out, so it helps everybody.
Yeah, as an artist, you started with the Sock Monkeys. It was for Mom. When did you train to be in television and hosting?
Oh, God. Okay, so what happened was, I was thinking about art as a visual medium, and how could I promote my art? And I thought, well, if you can't get me, I was doing a lot of speaking at Rotary and different clubs, and I thought, well, you could do this one shot, or you could be on TV and hit a lot of people at once. So I went to the local public access station and took every class they had and learned how to do things behind the camera, in front of the camera, every aspect that I could think of. And then I just started, I developed my own show. And it ran for 7 years, and I was in 50 markets across the USA. I grew it to, so it kind of took off.
You know, when you have a passion.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just see it through and you do it, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
How can we find your head covers?
Oh, okay. You can go to daphnesheadcovers.com or go to my website, but I would say just Daphne's Head Covers because that's a great purchase.
Okay, but to find out about you and your art.
To find out about me, go to shannongrisson.com.
That's Shannon, Shannon, GRISSOM.com.
Yeah.
It's really quite simple. It's your name.
It is my name. I like to keep the branding the same.
You're great.
Thank you.
Talking to you. Good meeting you. Thank you so much for being on the show with me this morning.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Aloha. We'll be back talking with Steve Elling, golf writer, right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
Poipu Bay on Kauai South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family, invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box and see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come join the Aloha. Visit our pro shop and take home a memory at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
In the security business, trust is earned over time. That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting-edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star. Star Protection Agency.
Our company has been in business more than 30 years, and we depend on Alakai Mechanical for everything. They maintain our air conditioners, sheet metal on our new roof. They just installed our new commercial kitchen. Doesn't matter if you're big business, a condo, or mom and pop store. If you want your job done on time, on budget, and done right, do what we do. Call Alakai Mechanical across the way. The best minds in air conditioning, plumbing, and sheet metal, that's Alakai Mechanical.
Tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
And welcome back. We've got demo days today. One at Hualalai, that's on the Big Island. One at Mid-Pacific Country Club, that's on Oahu. And one at Waiehu, that is on Maui. And TaylorMade, will be there. Jerry King, no, not so much. He's not going to be able to be at all three. He'll be at Hualalai. Welcome, Jerry, and on the Big Island. It's a beautiful day. And now, let's give away some tailor-made golf balls. Let's see. What do you think? Shall they be rocket balls or pentapearls? Rocket balls. Everybody's interested in how they work. So how about being the ninth caller? It's pretty simple. I don't care where you live in the world. 808-296-5467. If you're the ninth caller, they will come to you priority mail. 808-296-5467. Be the ninth caller. But while we're taking that, those calls come frantically in. Chaz has to help me with my next guest. He is a golf writer. He's on the board of directors for the Golf Writers Association of America. His name is Steve Elling. On Twitter, he is Elling Yelling. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I got one eight-year-old. I don't know how your previous guest gets by with twins. I got my hands full. I was actually on the driving range when you called me this morning to remind me that I was supposed to do this show and could barely hear you over, you know, trying to keep an eight-year-old pointed in the right direction with a golf club in his hand is a chore, much less if you're trying to do it with two.
I was talking about when to put a club in a child's hand safely so that they don't start swinging it around.
Yeah.
Did that ever happen to you? It's like, no, don't swing it, please. You're going to kill me.
Yeah, there's sort of the way we do it is I just take the bucket of range balls, dump them out, and then sit on the bucket. And then he stands there, and I put it on the tee. And, yeah, there have been a couple of close calls where I could have left a knuckle or two down when I didn't get my hand out of there fast enough. So,
because they're quick. Yeah, you know.
No, they don't. Yeah, they don't want to think. They just want to hit it as far as they can, as hard as they can, and then go home. When you're eight years old, that's the extent of your involvement.
Can I just say that was the most important thing that's been said so far on the show, other than talking about Dean Beeman and merchandising of the show and all the little names that are all over all of these players? Don't think. We think way too much when we're playing golf.
Yeah, especially I've kind of come to find out that I was probably better when I didn't read about technique. I just played my little dink slice, and then, you know, I got titanium drivers, and all of a sudden those balls that were missing 5 yards into the rough were missing 50 yards into some dude's hot tub. So, yeah, I think that's probably why the average handicap hasn't dropped over the years. The ball goes farther and more crooked. So, yeah, you might be hitting 9-iron into a lot of greens more often. You know, you probably make a few birdies. You're going to make a few more doubles, too, because you're not going to find a lot of them. That's the double whammy.
Yeah, I think that's why some people say, you know, I always suggest go take a lesson. Some people look at me and go, uh-uh. I don't want to get worse. I just want to plod along and do what I know I'm going to do. Don't confuse me. Well, speaking of confused, watching Tiger Woods, you know, I haven't gotten used to, seriously, I have to scroll down the leaderboard and find him amongst all the other guys. It is the strangest feeling. All right, now, where is he? Let's see, he's somewhere, wait, down here, wait, oh, no, going down, going
Yeah, it was 40-something heading into today.
Yeah, but he's up to 30-something now. Yeah, but the leaders haven't teed off yet, see?
So, yeah, it's been, I want to say over the last 12 years, that I don't know that there have been a lot of the beat guys that have seen that guy play more often than I have. There are probably a couple that have seen him hit more live shots. You know, for a long time, he was in Orlando. I still live in Orlando. You know, he was the local hero, iconic guy, and you pretty much charted his every breath he took. You know, I've seen a lot of it this year, and
he was standing by the fire hydrant when it happened.
No, I was safely home in bed at that late hour, I'm happy to say. Yeah, it's been up and down. I mean, I think what we've got are a couple of pretty clear conclusions at this point. The first one would be for those that were wondering whether he could get back, you have to kind of define that term. Is he the best player in the world? Yeah, I think he already is. I think he's already proven that he's better than the rest of these guys. He's won three times this year. Nobody else on the U.S. Tour has done that. If he hadn't basically really kind of gacked it away on a couple of holes at the British Open, he might have been right there with Ernie Els and Adam Scott there at the end. You know, you take out that train wreck he had in that sand trap as he was getting ready to make the turn there. And, you know, he's within a shot or so. So is he as good as he was before? No. Is he going to get there? No. His putting is just, I mean, we're 3 years into the bad putting now, and it's not, I just don't see that getting fixed. He's going to be, the weeks where he hits it good and putts well, he's going to win. The weeks where he hits it good and putts okay, he's going to be in contention. And the weeks where he hits it good and putts poorly, which is what's been going on this week, he's going to be way down in the pack. And Danielle, I would tell you that, you know, this Firestone tournament is a no-cut tournament. They started the week with 77 guys. If they actually had a cut, you know, and trimmed, cut the field in half, he wouldn't have made the cut. He was outside the top 40. So two over after 36 holes on a golf course where he's won seven times ought to tell you that there's still a lot of rusty parts. It's not just the putting. There's just a incredible inability to get the finesse game, the wedges and the shots from about 150 yards in dialed up. I'm not sure why. It's a part of it's a swing issue. He's hitting straight down on the ball now from a leverage standpoint. His hands are ahead of the ball. He de-lost the club. You see him coming up 20, 30 feet short and 20, 30 feet long from 100 yards, you know, the scoring zone, the green zone. So leaving a lot of shots out there. There's still some room for improvement. Can he still get there? I don't know. Does he work as hard as he used to? I don't think so. He's a dad now, a couple of kids, custodial issues. Does his meter still, the needle on that meter still run as high as it used to? I wonder. I think he thinks it does. I really wonder whether it does, because if he can't practice and isn't working as hard as he used to, how can he possibly be as good as he once was, given the physical deterioration, all the surgeries, you know, the accumulation of some doubt in his mind now that he knows he's not 10 feet tall and bulletproof and that everybody's afraid of him. Yeah, he's world number one, everything but in the world ranking, where he's number two. But he could still get better. That's the crazy thing, is there's still plenty of room for improvement.
Okay, got to ask you. He's willing to go change his swing four times, okay?
Yeah.
What's the ego trip going on that he can't go ask somebody to help him with his putting game?
Yeah, well, we're presupposing that he hasn't.
Okay.
I know he's, you know, he's gotten some feedback from Steve Stricker and other guys along the way. You know, his dad was always the guy that coached him in his putting.
Uh-huh.
You know, his dad was, his dad kind of basically set him up at a very young age. He used to be able to time Tiger Woods from the time that he would basically walk up to the ball, you know, toes pointed toward the target, take his practice swing, step up and hit it. You could time it within a second. He had such a crisp routine. I mean, it was orchestrated to the nth degree. I haven't done that lately. It might still be kind of the same thing, but it looks like there's a little more squeezing of the grip. And
a lot more hesitation. A lot more hesitation.
I would agree with you, and if there ought to be hesitation, because there's clearly a lot more doubt. He's just kind of pretty average on the greens of these days, and boy, he left a ton of scoring opportunities on the golf course at the British Open just by not being able to get the ball to the hole. You know, slower greens, couldn't adjust. I mean, to me, the huge red flag was 2 years ago when he showed up at St. Andrews and took that Scotty Cameron putter out of the bag that he had used to win 13 of his 14 majors and about $90 million. And he took it out of the bag and
yes,
started experimenting with other ones. Now, I don't know, maybe this was a contractual issue with Nike. Not sure. You know, certainly his off-the-course actions hurt Nike, too. Their sales, you know, have paid the price, as you would expect, when he was slumping and not winning. You know, Nike's hard goods have been down. And TaylorMade's basically the only guys right now that are really moving a lot of product. You know, if Tiger Woods isn't moving, you know, Nike doesn't have a huge stable of superstars right now that are gonna pick up the slack for him. So maybe the putter switch had something to do with that. But
that just it seems stupid because most of the regular people watching and Nike and Tiger Woods are all together. They're like glued together.
Sure.
No one
sure.
really thought about what putter he was using. They didn't extrapolate out. Well, oh, that's not a Nike putter. You know, it didn't really matter to the average person who would go out and buy.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're talking. That's not just inside baseball, right there. That's in the dugout and halfway up the tunnel into the locker room. That is such. I mean, they were talking about the fine print and the serial number on the minutia of the by the sole plate and the name brand and the serial number. So
that's way inside. Way too inside. Yeah. Nike's got to get out of that. That's nuts to me. Crazy. If that's the reason why. We need to take a break. I want to talk with you about Latana Stone.
Oh, boy.
Q School. Hey, and how about this? Here's an example of a tweet from, this is Elling Yelling, okay? And here, at the final moments of Q School for new Latino America tour, new PGA Tour offshoot, 7 of the top 10 on board are Yanks. Is that good? We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Your AC runs year-round in Hawaii. Whether you're an office, store, building, or shopping center, your AC on the fritz can ruin your day and stop your business. Alakai Mechanical does it all, from AC sales to maintaining your AC, so it runs better and lasts longer. Alakai world-class professionals are using only the best parts to keep you cool. Protect your investment. From window system to cooling towers across Hawaii, call Alakai Mechanical. Keeping you cool.
The Golf Club, sponsored by the Discount Furniture Warehouse, where the prices are so low, it's insane!
Now is the time to save some money.
The Discount Furniture Warehouse has many futons, sofas, and sectionals, bedroom sets, platforms, bunk beds, dining room sets, in stock now. 345 North Dimmitt Highway.
And check out our website at HawaiiDiscountFurniture.com.
Where the prices are so low, it's insane!
Waipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Waipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Waipu Bay. Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a pretty nice day today. We'll have some isolated showers, no thunderstorms in the forecast. The winds easterly 15 to 20 miles per hour. It's going to be another beautiful day in paradise. Makalei has a 10-12 for you. Volcano has an 11-06. Kapolei, 10-16. Ko'olina, 10-20. And Twilight. And Poipu has a 9:30, 10:20, 11:40, 25% off the already sale rack. And for all of you who've come all the way from Japan to play a round of golf today at Poipu, may you hit the sweet spot every time. We're talking with Steve Elling, golf writer. You can follow him at Elling Yelling on Twitter. Now, we just talked about one of the tweets. And see, some people don't understand how fascinating Twitter is. One thing that Steve said about Tiger being over at Firestone yesterday, shooting 2 over 72 and trailing the leader by 13 shots. I'm reading one of his tweets. Firestoned? Yes, indeed. But on this Q School, going away, and the guy's going to, the final moments of Q School for new Latino America tour, the 7 of the top 10 on board are Yanks.
I'll bet you would agree with me on this point. I think the single greatest attribute of professional golf is that it is a meritocracy. And you can't send in a field goal kicker at the end of the game to make a three-footer to win or lose it. It's all on you, and if you miss it, then, you know, you can blame spike marks or whatever, but the fact remains, it rests on the shoulders of the individual who's going to swing, sink or swim of his own volition and generally find his level in the game based on his talent level, you know, based on his skill set. He's either going to play on the, you know, the nationwide tour, as most people still call it, or the PGA Tour if he's good enough, or the European Tour, or the Canadian Tour. Or, the point being, this new Latino America Tour, the first tournament's going to be played September 3rd in Mexico, and most people are completely unaware of what we're talking about. The PGA Tour last year announced that it was going to set up a... if the PGA Tour is the major league, and the... You know, the nationwide tour, we'll just call it, is AAA. All then right. this tour would probably be single A baseball, probably not even double A baseball. And the idea is to try to stimulate the growth of the game in Central and South America, where we've seen a few players, so a few pretty good ones, Roberto DiVincenzo, Angel Cabrera.
Camilo
Villegas. Mm-hmm. I mean, from Mexico, Esteban Toledo. Some, you know, some guys that have been around and had pretty distinguished careers.
Johnny Vegas.
Yeah, Johnny V is from Venezuela. Yeah, Camilo's actually got a little brother who plays, who went to University of Florida. He plays on one of the sanctioned tours of the PGA Tour. So anyway, this is a, you know, this is an affiliate satellite tour of the PGA Tour, and they just completed their Q School at Doral yesterday. And I didn't pull up the final leaderboard at the time I sent out that tweet, with maybe an hour or two left in the final day of Q School. Yeah, 7 of the top 10 were American players, and I just raised the point that I don't know that that's going to stimulate the growth of the game a heck of a lot. But, you know, you can't institute quotas in golf or it obliterates the whole thing. You know, there was not all that long ago, a famous player got into some trouble by suggesting that perhaps there should be a limitation on the number of South Korean players on the LPGA because they were not native born.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
You know, that's not going to fly. So I think you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this tour plays out. There's not a lot of money. The purses are not very big, but they are professional tournaments. They are going to be run by the PGA Tour and by PGA Tour officials. And they've got a commissioner, and, you know, he'll be talking to the folks down in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, and, you know, and hopefully we're going to see some guys come through the developmental pipeline. It's just interesting because the models in Central and South America are pretty much completely unlike anything in the States. They're really, as a rule, don't go through the college system here unless you are an elite prospect like Camilo Villegas or Johnny Vegas.
All right.
Those guys were actually both very, very good All-American college players, but, you know, as a rule, you know, you get more of the Cabrera-type model, the Romero type model, guys that were caddies,
right,
learned how to play the game, you know, with whatever club they could get their hands on. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to track that thing, and starts on September 3rd and plays kind of through the winter month because, sort of like Hawaii, there's never really a winter in Central and Northern South America, and it's going to be kind of an off-season deal. It'll be interesting to see how many Americans try to go down there and play.
I hope those Americans going down to play stimulate pride of country for the guys down there playing.
Sure.
And
yeah,
that will infuse some, you know, work ethic, and they'll go out and
sure,
say, hey, we want to be as good as you. We are as good as you. We're going to prove we're as good as you.
What's the best way when you're a young player to learn how to play the game? It's to play as much as possible with guys that are better than you.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yes.
That's exactly right. And if that means getting your teeth kicked in every once in a while, well, so be it. You know, you need to see how they handle themselves, they comport themselves, the shots they can hit, different ways to skin the same cat. So hopefully the rising tide raises all ships. It'll be interesting to track.
I'm going to go to golf in the Olympics before we go to Latana Stone. And the reason I'm going to golf in the Olympics is because I opened my show talking about, I mean, look at this. We've got Missy Franklin. She's heralded as the female Phelps. Michael has his 21st Olympic medal, won gold for the 17th time. We've got Gabby Douglas on a cereal box. and golf is going to somehow compete with that? Does that mean that we need to go out and have a birdie fest, an eagle fest? What is it going to take for us to grab the spotlight from this kind of performance that they've got going on in track and field right now, swimming, gymnastics, yeah, whatever? You know, par, do we protect par? To heck with par, Peter Alice said on, what's his name's show? Faraday.
Yeah, Faraday.
Right, who needs par?
I've never been a big proponent of the plan to begin with of golf in the Olympics, and I think you don't need to look much farther than tennis in the Olympics. Do you know, I mean, have they even handed out the gold medal yet in tennis? Do we know that? Do we
know
where they are? Is it over yet? Did one of the Williams sisters win a gold medal or something?
Roger Federer still wants to. It's something he hasn't accomplished yet. That's the only reason I'm paying any attention.
Yeah, I'm sure his life will be really hollow if he doesn't win an Olympic gold medal, what with the 600 majors that he's won over the years. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to really affect his sleep at night. But, you know, that right now they've, they're reassessing what the format's going to be. That was a point of discussion over at the British Open to some of the officials of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club, one of the governing bodies of this whole push. And, you know, frankly, 72 holes of stroke play was what the players wanted because that's what they're most familiar with. And they thought, well, gee, if we just play it that way, then the best player that week will win. So, I personally think they should run some sort of zone qualifying, sort of like they do with soccer for the World Cup, and you got to get through this, that, and the other in order to get a place at the table. Because
that's
otherwise,
I
mean, what are you going to do? You're going to say every country gets two players, and at that point the U.S. could have, six of the top 10 players of the world. England's got, three of the top 10 players of the world right now. I forget where Justin Rose is at the moment, but he's right there. Somebody's going to get left standing by the wayside unless they figure out a way to get the best players. I think you want the best players. And is it an individual thing? Is it a team thing? Is there a team medal? I mean, they're going to try and do men and women. Or is it going to be men first, women second? They're going to play the same golf course, move the tees up? There's a lot of questions there. And, I really don't think that this is any... This is no great insightful observation here. This is all about growing the game in Asia, which is the one place right now where people are actually taking up the game. I'm broadly stereotyping here, but that is a portion of the world where attention to detail and diligence and flat out work ethic, they could be corner of the globe could be a major part of golf within 10 years if the seed money gets spent to set up Olympic programs in golf. They need the developmental side taken care of. There's really not much in those countries outside of Japan and South Korea right now. So,
you know what bothers me about growing the game of golf when we keep talking about it?
We've already poisoned the well in the States. There's more golf courses closing, 5 years in a row now?
Yes,
are opening?
Yeah, but when we talk about growing the game, we're not trying to talk about growing the game because of its inherent great principles and the wonderful things that it does for our lives. It's about the business of golf needing another marketplace.
That's right. This is probably from a tour standpoint, it's about finding another place where they can max out on some rights fees.
Yeah, or sell some more equipment.
Equipment manufacturers. There's a billion people right there and a large chunk of acreage that
it's a marketplace.
Play the game. So, yeah, this is, you're right, this isn't about spreading the gospel per se as it is moving the comma a couple of more zeros to
right.
the left.
What did TaylorMade? Yeah. TaylorMade made like just a gazillion dollars in the quarter, I think. I can't even remember what the number was. It just blew my mind. It was in the billions,
Well, it's interesting
wow.
in that, they're trying to push this offshore, and, you're seeing that the PGA Tour playing in China now. The European Tour has been playing in China for quite a while, and in India even. An attempt to kind of get ahead of the tour and stake out their territory there. The model in the States has been broken for a while. Greed kind of caused the axles to burn out. And, most of the golf courses that were built here in the States were built for, you know, on the mainland I'm talking about, were real estate developments where the builder didn't care about the golf course at all. It was all a means of moving lots and building houses. And then when the build-out was complete, as often as not, they threw the set of car keys in the front door and told the homeowners, there you go, here's your golf course, take care of it. We don't run golf courses, it's yours now. So, you know, that happened over and over again here, especially in Florida. There's a lot more supply than there is demand. And, you know, it's been a very long decade of reckoning in that regard. And I suspect we're going to still have more contraction before we have any expansion because of the, you know, all the usual reasons of time, difficulty, and cost.
Mm-hmm. I'm just take a moment here. Take a breath. I haven't gotten even halfway through my list, and we're almost out of time. We are KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo, KTOH FM1 Princeville. Latana Stone, 10 years old.
Right.
Okay. Another golf prodigy. She's played her way into the U.S. Women's Amateur. She's under par, beautiful round, shot a 71, I think it was. And, you know, I worry about these young ladies. Yeah, can we call them ladies? No.
Yeah, you're right. That's, what your was son, 10 years old? Your son, be the fifth grade.
Yeah, your son's eight.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, in it's 2 years, shocking. In 2 years, you've got your kid out there playing in the U.S. Amateur?
Yeah, I'm still on the fence, man, on this one. I'll be honest with you. In fact, I've got a fence post wedging me up in a very uncomfortable position on this issue. It's just, she's obviously good enough, right?
Yes.
She did it.
Yes.
You don't sleepwalk your way into that event.
No, and that's not the point. I saw her on Golf Channel. I don't know that we should, because she's so good and that's great, let her kind of go under the radar. Let her just do her thing. But we tend to, in the media, tend to take these young people and then, you know, prop them up on Golf Channel and interview them for a half an hour, or, okay, 5 minutes, and ask them, you know, what are your goals? Goals?
Yeah, right. Yeah, my goal is
right.
Yeah, when you're ten years old, your goal is to not have to get braces. Yeah,
What are your expectations for this week? I understand why, but at the same time, I wish it wasn't necessary for us to do that.
I don't know enough about her parents and about her background to make any, you know, broad aspersions about whether anybody's asleep at the wheel on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, we're looping back here, but if you want to improve, you've got to play with people that are better. We just talked about that.
Yeah.
But it's more than just about balls and strikes. I mean, she's not a fully developed person between the years, and I think in some cases getting beaten down at a young age, I'm not suggesting that she will. For all I know, she might make the final. That's hard to say.
Absolutely.
You know, Lexi Thompson was a world-class player when she was 12 years old and playing at, you know, the Women's U.S. Open at Southern Pine, you know. So, yeah, it's a weird thing. You know, the women's biology clock is even...
Oh, we're way ahead.
Predicting the men.
We're
yeah,
way ahead of you.
I mean, I thought it was pretty insane that that kid Andy Zhang made it through qualifying and made it to the men's U.S. Open. And he was, what was he, 16?
Yeah.
Something like that? 14?
14.
I can't even remember.
14. I think it was 14.
Yeah, he's 14. Looked like he was about 18. I think 14's right. God, I wrote enough about him. I've already forgotten. but, you know, you kind of wonder at what point it's, you know, the law of diminishing returns gets kicked in here. And I hope her parents are sensitive to the fact that, you know, like with Michelle Wee, I think you need to play sometimes at your own level and learn how to win. Experience success with maybe just a smattering of this type of thing until you get the training wheels off. You know, it's pretty easy for me to say that. And again, she's clearly talented enough.
Absolutely.
To play, and you don't want to deny anybody that right. But, you know, I think it's just got to be left up to the parents. And as I just said, as a parent of an 8-year-old, and thinking about somebody who's 10 years old, is, I mean, 24, 30 months difference, maybe separating the two of them. It's incomprehensible to me that you'd be playing at a venue, at an event, with that type of history and that type of perceived pressure.
Yeah, I just wish they would let her play and forget the interview room. Just let her play and do her thing, and eventually she'll grow into the interview thing. It just seems hard. You know, it's a real... Can we talk again? This has been fun.
Sure. Yeah.
Good. Great. Steve Elling is his name. You can follow him on Twitter at Elling Yelling, and you can, I guarantee you, not get BS'd. He's not going to give you the company line. He's going to give it from the heart, from the mind. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Danielle, thanks for having me.
Aloha. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
Our company has been in business more than 30 years, and we depend on Alakai Mechanical for everything. They maintain our air conditioners, sheet metal on our new roof. They just installed our new commercial kitchen. Doesn't matter if you're big business, a condo, or mom and pop store. If you want your job done on time, on budget, and done right, do what we do. Call Alakai Mechanical across the way. The best minds in air conditioning, plumbing, and sheet metal, that's Alakai Mechanical.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tea time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
Yeah, a mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
And just a side note, Michael Phelps, according to his mom, in a very long Subway commercial that was teasing us, was saying, what's Michael Phelps going to do in his retirement? He's going to play more golf. He wants to play courses around the world. That's according to moms are getting these guys in more trouble. I think one mom pointed out that her son was a one-night stander. So girls, don't expect anything from him. That was Lochte. Yeah, all righty. Here we go. We're going to take on, I want you to put your hats on, because now we're going into the physics. Robert Grober, you met Robert here on the show. He created Sonic Golf. It's a great way to listen to your swing and get your tempo. Welcome back to the show, Bob Grober. It's good to have you on.
Nice to be back, Danielle.
PhD in physics, has left Yale. That's when you met him last. And now working for a fascinating hedge fund that employs a whole bunch of guys in astrophysics, mathematicians, statisticians, and yourself included. Must it be a wonderful transition from, not the staid walls of Yale, but it's must be growing, always changing, and an interesting environment to be in.
Well, yeah, you know, I was in academia for a long time, and so it's fun to try something else. But, you know, the good thing about all of it is you continue to play golf no matter what you do.
No matter what you do. Speaking of playing golf, I have to mention that Jim Wilhelm of Makakilo is our winner of the golf balls. And I want to congratulate you, Jim, because you've won the TaylorMade Rocket Balls. And somebody else is now going to win the TaylorMade Pentaballs. All you have to be is the ninth caller. And the number is 808-296-5467. Bob Grober created a video. It's on YouTube, and it just blew my mind. All right? It's about putting. He loves to play the game. He likes to take it apart. It's physics. So he's got this video and I'm watching. Bob, I had no idea you could putt the way you're putting. I'm like, he's sinking every one after another, after another. They're all going, but what's even the most, okay, imagine the hole, all right? Imagine the hole. And about how far away is the stake from the hole? About a foot?
Yeah, about a foot.
Okay, a foot away from the hole is a stake in the green, okay? And he's aiming for the stake and it's going in the hole, okay? Every time he aims for the stake, it goes in the hole. Aims for the stake, go. It's a flat surface. And the YouTube video, you can find it under putting on a planar surface. Okay? Just look and watch this. It'll blow your mind. Can you explain, please, how that works?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I tried doing that this morning at a golf course, and I told somebody I was going to have to do this on the radio today. And he said, good luck with that.
Come on, help me. We'll do this together.
Okay, good. So let's start really, really simple. And so the idea is, can you identify a family of putts that all have something in common? And so we can start really, really simply. If I had a green that was flat and level, so there's no break.
Right.
And if we took a family of 10-foot putts all ringed around the hole.
Okay.
And I asked you, where should you aim all of these putts to make them go in the hole? What would you say?
The hole.
The hole, exactly. So there's and you would say, you know, all those putts are pretty reasonably related in the sense that they're all the same distance. They all have the same target.
Right.
It turns out that when you start to tilt the green, now so the green is still flat, mm-hmm. but it's not level anymore, meaning that, you know, it has some tilt to it, some degree.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now you can take that same family of 10-foot putts and you can ask, do they still have a common target? And the answer is yes. They still all have a common target, but the target is no longer the hole. It turns out that as you tilt the green up, the common target moves up the green, uphill from the
okay.
hole.
It's okay. Your dog is approving with what you're saying.
My dog just discovered a squirrel.
But apparently you're on the right track because we got an approval from dog. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Right.
No. Okay, so the deal is that so you have this family of 10-foot putts. They all have a common target. The target is directly uphill from the hole. And that turns out to be incredibly useful. So this video just shows exactly that. I find the common target. I put it as a stake in the ground. And then I put down just a bunch of chalk lines just to show lines to those stakes. And then I just show that if you hit all these putts towards that stake, that common target, all the balls go in the hole. It's
fantastic. Now you can use this when you talk about it. The beauty of this underlying geometry to the putter. You map it out. You take the green, and you look from different places on the green for your target.
Exactly. So. The idea is, can you use this as a means of improving the probability that you're going to choose a correct target line? That's the whole game, right? And today when we do that, we look at just a single putt. We get behind the putted hand, and we sort of imagine how that putt's going to break, and we choose our target point. Often people choose so many inches outside the hole or something like that. And my whole point here is that there's more data there, and in particular, there's this whole family of putts that you can look at. And if instead of just looking at one putt, if you take a couple of steps to the left and imagine sort of what those putts would look like, same distance from the hole, and you take a couple of steps to the right and imagine what those putts would look like, as you do that and look down the line of all those putts, you'll find that there's always a common point which stays in your field of view. And you'll find that common point is uphill from the hole, and that's generally a reasonable place to aim.
Okay. All right. Now, I don't want you to take forever finding your line when you're looking for your putt, because you're going to drive your playing partners crazy.
Exactly.
But
it's not so hard just to take a step to the left and then a step to the right.
Exactly. To find that common, and it's going to take a little bit of practice. You're going to have to sit down and practice a little bit to find, and when you actually hit the stroke and hit the ball, to see how it runs. And so then your eye, you can start trusting your eye and what you've seen. That's the most important part, is learning to trust your vision. You know, yes. And we're going to have an eye doctor on pretty soon, Dr. Melanie Tantazzaro, to talk about trusting your vision and maybe your vision's going. You know, sometimes you know, Craig Farnsworth has talked about see it, sink it. So it's really important to make sure that your eyes are working, because that may be part of your problem. But in the physics of it, I found that fascinating, that you could look from one side of the you know, and you see people go, most times you go front of the putt and then you go on the other side, you know, directly exactly. Opposite. That's not necessarily the best thing to do. You want to go to the side, each side, and kind of take a look from those sides, one step to the left or two, one step or two to the right, and you'll find that common target. Please. Exactly. Get a look at that video. You know what? When I started reading your paper, there is, for those of you who are scientifically inclined, there is an accompanying paper with fascinating math, which right over, you know, I can't even understand.
That's so nice of you to call the math fascinating.
Oh, it is. I mean, just the symbols that you use are fascinating. How we came up with the idea of writing something with a squiggle to make it, you know, who devised those little symbols to mean what they do? I think that's fascinating to me. I'm wondering on putting tempo.
Ah.
This is another very important thing that you brought up, too. And, you know, you don't know how much of a oomph to put into your putt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another paper that's out there. So you've done your homework.
Yeah. Yes. One can't talk with Robert Grober, PhD, without having done just a little bit of homework.
I see. Yeah. So there's another topic related. So the first question is, where do you aim? And then the second question is, how hard do you hit it? And, you know, that's an interesting conversation by itself. You want to get into that as well?
Absolutely, I want to get into that, because, I mean, it's one thing to be able to find your target, but if you don't know how hard to hit it, it's like, I've watched a number of putts this week at the WTC Bridgestone, and they're coming up short. They're, you know, a lot of them are off target. I'll just watch Tiger for a little while, and you wonder, whew, boy, what is he looking at? What's wrong with his eye? But, you know, leaving a putt short that is an eagle putt or a birdie putt, that's, and you were dead on line, but whoops, you know, the brakes come on. Not fun.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'd like to take this up, please. Can we talk a little bit? Because you were, at last time we talked or spoke on in our email, you were in the process of finishing the one on how hard to hit. So
yeah, good. Okay, so, you know, ever since Sonic Golf, I've been sort of obsessed with the notion of resonance and how resonance plays a role in athletic motion. And so resonance itself is a long topic. But, you know, a simple way to think of it is just take like a pendulum and sort of swing a pendulum back and forth, like a grandfather clock. And there's a pace at which it takes the least amount of energy to make this thing move. And that pace is what we call resonance, and that's a natural place to operate, especially given the idea that, you know, it takes the least amount of energy to make something go. That's attractive to an athlete. So there's a natural pace, which is called resonance. And that plays a role in putting, it turns out. And the way that originally came to that, I don't know if you're familiar with the book's Tour Tempo. It's a wonderful book about tempo in golf. But one of the things they did was to measure the tempo of putting strokes. And they found a commonality amongst really good putters was that there's a particular ratio to the length of the duration of the backswing and the duration of the downswing has a ratio of about 2-1. That it takes about twice as long to swing back as it does down. And it turns out that that's exactly what you would get if you were swinging the club resonantly, that is where it's most efficient, and applying the same amount of force back as you do down. If you push back equally as you push down, and if you do that resonantly, you'll have exactly this ratio of 2-1. How are we doing so far?
Doing really good. So it takes...
Okay
go. Keep going.
So resonance, which is, you know, an all-important property of you know, doing things efficiently, that's how most good athletes behave, turns out to be the tempo that great putters have adopted. And if you take that to its logical conclusion, there's an interesting relationship between how long the putting stroke is and how far the ball goes. And it turns out that if you square the length of the backswing, you'll find out how far the ball goes. So if you take the club back one unit and it goes forward one unit, ball goes one unit forward. If you take the club back two units, whatever those two units happen to be, the club will go forward four units. If you take the club back three units, the ball will go forward nine. So as you double the length of your backswing, you, by a factor of four, increase the distance that the ball goes. And it's this beautiful relationship between the length of the backswing and the distance that the ball goes, which becomes clear when you think about this whole concept within the context of resonance. What? Did I lose you there, kiddo?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because in simplistic terms, as I take in my mind, I take my putter back. I'm holding my putter and I'm pulling it back. So based on how far my backswing is, that's going to affect how far my ball's going to go. I mean, it only makes sense. In a pendulum world, the power of the putter head coming in contact with the ball, if it's been pulled back further, it's going to go farther. Absolutely. Yeah. And if you give me a formula for which then the other minds in the world can then extrapolate that out, and then, yeah, bam, I'm just about there.
So the beautiful thing about it, so the crazy thing is, you know, people will say, oh, no, that's so quantitative. You can't do quantitative things on the golf course. But, you know, the reality is that you can use quantitative things as a means of practicing.
Yes.
And once you sort of have a structure, a well-defined structure, which provides positive feedback, that is, when you do something, the right outcome happens. If you practice that, if you practice within the context of that kind of a structure, what happens is you'll develop a feel. In the end, it's about how much force to apply and how to apply the force. And you'll learn that, and you'll develop a feel for it.
Feel. And, F-E-E-L.
Exactly.
Yes, because...
So I think it's a good means for, you know, practicing in a way that encourages people to develop a good feel.
That's right, because you don't take that onto the course and figure this stuff out while you're playing. You figure out how this feels. All of these things feel, then you take the feel, because putting is feeling. But if you have a little bit of information behind it so you can develop the feel, you're a little bit further ahead. By the way, Sonic Golf is still being sold on the website if you'd like it. But what I liked is how you've changed the focus using the technology, measuring how people hear. I mean, hearing how people walk.
Yeah.
So that neurologists can then help people recover from traumatic injury, like, or strokes, right? Not just injuries, but a stroke.
That's definitely a direction we're going.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. That's healing, and it's really beautiful. Your mind fascinates me. I really appreciate you taking the time to being on the show, being on the show.
I always enjoy talking with you. It's always a blast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here. And I think we have a winner of our golf balls. Let's see. Not yet? No winner yet? Is it possible that we haven't written it in? Chaz is working on that right now. I know we have a winner. So someone has won. Please don't call anymore because it'll drive him crazy. Looks like Kapolei, somebody from Kapolei possibly. Yeah. Okay. We're going to get that. Bob Grober, Robert, thanks so much. What do you prefer being called, Bob or Robert?
You can call me anything you like.
Dr. Grober, thanks for being on the show. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. And congratulations from Kapolei, our winner, and you'll get the balls. We'll have the name. Chaz has it. Okay, great. Thanks so much for being here. Thank you for your mana. But that's what I say at the very end of the show. First, I want to thank our sponsors for making the show possible. Poipu Bay Golf Course, combining the beauty of nature, the design of Robert Trent Jones Jr., and of course, bordered by the Emerald Green Mountains and the 30 acres of tropical plants, ancient places of worship. You have to experience Poipu Bay. Alakai Mechanical, the best minds in plumbing and sheet metal and air conditioning statewide. They will take care of your system. Service is what Alakai Mechanical is all about. Star Protection for property threat, risk assessment, protection for your home, your business, whatever special event you're having. Get the Star team on your property. Discount Furniture Warehouse. Find them online, HawaiiDiscountFurniture.com. Better yet, go down to their showroom. It's right at 345 Nimitz. That's next to Floridec. Lots of parking, and that's where Bunk Beds Hawaii is. Discount Furniture Warehouse, where the prices are so low, it's insane. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.